This is the first day of this two-day September 2012 sesshin. I'm going to be reading this sesshin from a book, mostly the words of Ajahn Chah. Book was translated and put together by Paul Breiter. Ajahn Chah was born in 1918, I believe, and died in 1992. He was a monk in Thailand, in northeast Thailand, one of the forest monks, one of the most well-known, and the teacher of many of Western teachers here in this country now, teachers of Vipassana. Jack Kornfield is one, and others who studied with him. He's a really, really down-to-earth and basic guy, and really drawn to this just because of partly because of tragedies that have happened in my own family. It's just I just really want to read this, so I'm going to start here on with a section that's titled "That's About Right," and we'll just launch right into it. He says, "Where is the Dharma? The entire Dharma is sitting here with us. Whatever you experience is right, just as it is." Whatever you experience is right, just as it is. There's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't need to be different than it is. Zen Master Linji said, "There's nothing that I don't like. There's nothing that I don't like." When we chant affirming faith in mind, we chant, "This whole world as it is, whole and complete. This whole this sense world is enlightenment." It's right under our nose. He says, "When you've gotten old, don't think that's something wrong. When your back is aching, don't think that's some kind of mistake. If you are suffering, don't think that's wrong. If you're happy, don't think that's wrong. All of this is Dharma. Suffering is just suffering. Happiness is merely happiness. Hot is merely hot. Cold is merely cold. It's not that I am happy, I am suffering, I am good, I am bad, I gained something, I lost something. What is there that can be lost by a person? There's nothing at all. Gaining something is Dharma. Losing it is Dharma. Being happy and comfortable is Dharma. Being ill at ease is Dharma. It means not grasping onto all these conditions, but recognizing what they are. If you have happiness, you realize, oh, happiness is not permanent. If you're suffering, you realize, oh, suffering is not permanent. Oh, this is really good. It's not permanent. That is bad, really bad. Also not permanent. They have their limits, so don't hold so firmly onto them. Don't grasp at them. Don't manipulate. Don't try to keep what you can't keep. Don't try to push away what can't be pushed away. As soon as we grasp at anything, we've gone wrong. See this in our practice so directly. And yet we keep asking, how can I grasp this? How can I grasp Mu? How can I get hold of my breath? What is it you want to take hold of? As soon as you give practice or enlightenment or happiness, anything, when as soon as you give it a name, then it becomes a thing outside you that you need to grasp. But what you're looking for, you already have. The Buddha taught about impermanence. This is the way things are. They don't follow anyone's wishes. That is noble truth. Impermanence rules the world, and that is something permanent. This is the point we are deluded at, so this is where you should be looking. So hard to remember, to see, to look and see that nothing is permanent. They've studied people's emotions in great detail, and one of the things that is pretty much true of people is someone who's in one emotional state is almost incapable of imagining some other emotional state. When we're angry, we can't imagine being happy. When we're sad, we can't imagine it. If you see somebody who's in a deep depression and you talk to them about something that they might enjoy, they can't picture it. We always think the weather we're experiencing is the weather forever. I don't know how many times I've packed for sesshin, and the sesshin's over, and what was hot conditions are now cold, or what's cold is now hot, and I find, oh, I don't have anything that works. Just don't imagine it. You don't imagine things being different, and yet they never stay the same. He says, whatever occurs, recognize it as right. Everything is right in its own nature, which is ceaseless motion and change. Our bodies exist thus. All phenomena of body and mind exist thus. We can't stop them. They can't be stilled. Not being stilled means their nature of impermanence. If we don't struggle with this reality, then wherever we are, we will be happy. Wherever we sit, we're happy. Wherever we sleep, we are happy. Even when we get old, we don't make a big deal out of it. You stand up and your back hurts and you think, yeah, that's about right. It's right, so don't fight it. When the pain stops, you might think, ah, that's better, but it's not better. You're still alive, so it's going to hurt again. This is the way it is, so you have to keep turning your mind to this contemplation and not let it back away from the practice. We think we know this, but we continually get caught up and we continually back away from the practice. All we can do, really, is catch ourselves and return. It says, keep steadily at it, and don't trust in things too much. Trust the Dharma instead, that life is like this. Don't believe in happiness. Don't believe in suffering. Don't get stuck in following after anything. It really goes against our habit nature. Don't believe in happiness. Doesn't say, don't be happy. Don't trust any condition to continue uninterrupted. With this kind of foundation, then whatever occurs, never mind. It isn't anything permanent. It isn't anything certain. The world is like this. Then there is a path for us. A path to manage our lives and protect ourselves with mindfulness and clear awareness of ourselves, with all-encompassing wisdom. That is the path in harmony. Nothing can deceive us because we have entered the path. Constantly looking here, We are meeting the Dharma at all times. Because we're present. Not casting ahead. Not chewing over what came before. This is really our refuge. This moment. This moment that doesn't stay for a moment. Skipping ahead a little bit, this is a section that's entitled, "It's Not Permanent, It's Not Sure." He says, we focus on the here and now Dharma. This is where we can let go of things and resolve our difficulties. Right now, in the present, because the present moment contains both cause and result. The present is the fruit of the past. It is also the cause of the future. That we are sitting here right now is the result of what we have done in the past, and what we do now will become the cause for what we experience in the future. So the Buddha taught to discard the past and discard the future. Saying discard doesn't really mean that we throw anything away, but that we remain in this single point of the present where the past and the future come together. So the word discard is just a way of speaking. What we want to do is be aware of the present where causes and results are to be found. We look at the present and see continuous arising and ceasing, arising and ceasing. Discard the past and the future means not to cling to the past or the future. The whole nature of our practice comes down to not clinging, not going outside, not grasping at conditions, and not pushing them away. He says, I keep saying this, but people don't really take it to heart. Phenomena appear in the present moment, and they are not stable or reliable. People don't look at this into this very much. Whatever comes about, I'll say, oh, this is not permanent, or this is uncertain. This is extremely simple. Extremely simple. Whatever occurs is impermanent and uncertain. But not seeing or understanding this, we become confused and distressed. In what is impermanent, we see permanence. In what is uncertain, we see certainty. I explain it, but people don't get it, and they end up living their lives in endless pursuit of things. We get it, but we don't get it. We need to hear it over and over again. We need to put it into practice over and over again. We need to get burned. Put our faith in that which is unreliable, and then we learn. How many times do we have to learn? Well, it's hard to say. What does it take to look at what's right in front of us? We've all had the experience of talking to someone, maybe explaining something, and realizing halfway through that they're not hearing a word that we're saying. They're looking somewhere else. They're preoccupied with something else. Used to occasionally drop some food on the ground around my old dog, Nora. And I'd think, oh, okay, let's have Nora lick this up. I say, Nora, food, here, look. Point at it. Dogs don't understand fingers very well. She knew there was food around, but I'd have to take her head and push against all her resistance to get her down to where she could smell it. Then she'd eat it. He says, really, if you reach the point of peace, you will be here at this place I am talking about, this point in the present. Whatever appears, any form of happiness or suffering, you will see that it is uncertain. This very uncertainty itself is itself the Buddha, because uncertainty is the Dharma, and the Dharma is the Buddha. But more people believe the Buddha and the Dharma to be something external to themselves. It's just a reflex. It's out there somewhere. Somewhere to be realized at some later date. We just chanted, this earth where we stand is the pure lotus land, and this very body, the body of Buddha. Begin to get this into our bodies, into our heads. We begin to turn, begin to smell the food on the floor. Things start to shift. Takes a lot of work. Roshi always says, it's so simple, it's not easy. We have this habit, it's built up over so much time, of always looking outside, always using our thoughts. Now we have this practice. The breath, koan. We have an intellectual faith in it. That faith needs to deepen. It deepens not at our pace. It doesn't fit with our agenda. Deepens over time. We'll get to the present in time. All we can do is work from where we're at. There's nothing, we're not required to be someone that we aren't. Used to spend a lot of time in my early Zen career worrying about me compared to others. So right there, I'm in trouble. You know, if you're much worse than others, that just means you have more room for improvement. He says, when the mind starts to realize that all things, without exception, are by their very nature uncertain, the problems of grasping and attachment start to decrease and wither away. If we understand this, the mind starts to let go and put things down, not grasping onto things, and attachment can come to an end. When it comes to an end, one must reach the Dharma. There is nothing beyond this. When it comes to an end, you can't miss it. It's nothing we have to get, it's only what we have to let go of. He says, when we meditate, this is what we want to realize. We want to see impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. These, of course, are the three characteristics of existence. The anicca, dukkha, and anatta, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self, the non-existence of a self, a separate self. This all begins with seeing uncertainty. When we see it perfectly clearly, then we can let go. When we experience happiness, we see that this is uncertain. When we experience suffering, we see this is uncertain. We get the idea that it would be good to go to some place, and we realize, well, that's uncertain. We think it would be good to stay where we are, and we realize that's not certain either. We see that absolutely everything is uncertain, and we will live at ease. Then we can stay where we are and be comfortable, or we can go somewhere else and be comfortable. This is really an antidote to decision paralysis, analysis paralysis. See people who just agonize over decisions. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I take this course or take that course? Should I move to this apartment or stay here? Who knows? Just pick one. Pick one and things will work out. If you pick the wrong one, you can fix it later. Doesn't mean we don't use our intelligence. But there's a certain point at which we just have to admit we don't know. Can't control everything, can't predict everything. Get the perfect job, all of a sudden you got a new boss. It's horrible, can't live with him. Have the perfect wife, she gets sick. There's nothing like that that you can rely on. Don't put your faith there. It says, then we can stay where we are and be comfortable, or we can go somewhere else and be comfortable. Doubts will end like this. They will end by this method of practicing in the present. There's no need to be anxious about the past because it is gone. Whatever happened in the past has arisen and ceased in the past, and now it's finished. We can let go of concern about the future because whatever will occur in the future will occur and cease in the future. When lay supporters come to make offerings here, they recite, "In the end, may we finally reach nirvana in a future time." When or where that is, they don't really know. It's so very far away. They don't say here and now, they say sometime in the future. It's always somewhere, sometime there, not here, only there. In the next life, it will also be there. And in future lives, it will be there. So they never arrive because it's always there. It's like people inviting an old monk to receive alms food in a village and saying, "Please, venerable sir, go for alms in the village over there." Then when he has walked to a distant village, they say, "Please, venerable one, receive your alms over there." He keeps on walking, but wherever he arrives, they tell him, "Please receive your alms food over there." The poor old fellow will never see a morsel of food. He just keeps on walking there and over there, and nothing comes of it. We tend to be like this. We never say here and now. Why not? Is there something wrong with the present? It's because we are still involved with things. We still delight in the worldly and don't dare to give it up. So we prefer to let it be sometime in the future. Just like someone egging on the old monk with talk of a meal offering. "Please, sir, travel over there for your alms." So he goes on in search of the place over there where he can find alms food to sustain himself, but it's never here, and he never receives any food. Let's talk about here and now, in the present. Practice really can be done in the present. We don't need to look to sometime in the future. Rather than becoming anxious about anything, we just look at the here and now Dharma and see uncertainty and impermanence. Then Buddha mind, the one who knows, comes to be. It is developed through this knowledge that all things are impermanent. It's developed through non-clinging, through non-abiding, through mu, just mu. Sometimes practice is foggy and muddy. Tons of distractions. The breath is faint. It's almost not there. We don't have to worry about those conditions. They're not an obstacle to practice. They're just conditions. You can look into mu if it's faint and foggy. You can follow the breath. It's thready. All just hinges on turning the mind within. Not going outside. Over time, we gain faith in this moment, this present moment, the only place where practice can happen. So helpful to be in Sesshin, have this opportunity, even if it's painful, even if we keep tripping over ourselves, we have this sustained opportunity to find our way into where we already are. Skipping ahead a little bit, he says, practicing like this, we are continuously seeing clearly within our own minds. Phenomena arise and cease. Ceasing, there is new arising. Arising, there is ceasing. If we form attachment to what occurs, suffering comes about right there. If we are letting go, suffering will not come about. We see this in our own minds. When suffering does come up, when we have these aw shit moments, one teacher once said it's like a compassionate alarm clock telling you you're living in the dream. It got caught up in causes and conditions and externals. Why pain is useful. We can gain real certainty about the Dharma when meditating like this, and we can come to the point where all we have to do is be looking at our minds in the present. We let go of the past and the future and look in the present, and we see the three characteristics continuously in everything. Walking, there is impermanence. Standing, there is impermanence. Sitting, there is impermanence. That's the inherent truth in things. Or do you think that by going to meditate on a lonely mountaintop, you'll have peace? You may have peace for a while, but when the austerity of living there catches up with you, you'll start to feel hungry and exhausted. So you'll come down the mountain and head for town. Lots of good food and comforts there. But then you begin to think, it's disturbing to your practice. Better go somewhere remote. Really, one who suffers when living alone is foolish. Someone who suffers when living with others is foolish. It's like chicken turds. If you carry them around by yourself, they stink. If you keep them when you're among others, they also stink. You carry the rotten things with you. If we're astute, then we may be living around a lot of people and feel it isn't a peaceful environment, and that will be correct to some extent, but still, it can be a cause for gaining wisdom. I developed some wisdom from having a lot of disciples. Lay people came in large numbers, many monks wanting to be disciples, and everyone had their own views and dispositions. I experienced a lot of different things, and I had to rise to the occasion. My capacity for patience and endurance was strengthened. To the extent that I could bear with it, I was able to keep practicing. Then all my experience became meaningful. There really is sort of a concept of optimum stress. We can be pushed much farther than we think. And it can be helpful. If we have conditions too much to our liking, then we tend to stagnate. It's good for things not to go the way we want all the time. And yet we're trying to get them to go the way we want again and again and again. The great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose. To the extent that I could bear with it, I was able to keep practicing. Then all my experience became meaningful. But if we don't understand correctly, there is no resolution. Living alone will be good until we get fed up with it. Then we'll think it's better to live in a group. Having simple food will seem good, and then maybe having a lot of food will seem to be the right way. It goes on like this when we can't resolve our minds once and for all. Seeing that everything is unreliable, we will take all situations of lack or plenty as uncertain and not have attachment to them. We pay attention to the present moment, wherever this body happens to be dwelling. Then staying will be okay. Traveling will be okay. Everything will be okay because we are focused on the practice of recognizing the way things are, the way things really are. People say Ajahn Chah only talks about not certain. They get fed up with hearing this and they run away from me. We went to listen to Ajahn Chah teach, but all he talked about was not certain. They can't bear to hear the same old thing anymore, so they leave. I guess they're going to look for some place where things will be certain, but they'll come back. It's, Zen Master Dogen said, "This sustained exertion is not something the people of the world naturally love or desire, yet it is the last refuge of all." If they're lucky, they'll come back. It's alarming how easy it is to slip back into normal life of not practicing, of just grasping at pleasures, taking care of things that need to be done. When we come to practice, we're like somebody in the midst of a stream who's grabbed on to a branch on the bank or hanging on. But when we let go, stop practicing, the stream sweeps us away. It can be a long time and far down the bank before we grab hold again. I was talking with a friend the other day who had been, at one point he'd been an attendant to Roshi Kaplow and been there when someone had come to see Roshi Kaplow. He'd been a student many, many years earlier, but had gone off. And he was absolutely, absolutely stricken. He'd done good things, family, career, always intending to get back to practice. And now he was old. Felt like his whole life had slipped away. All Roshi Kaplow could do was just nod. None of us are immune from this. We all let go. It's just, it helps to be clear, to know what we're faced with, to know the situation we're in. So, an impression I got early on, many people have, that Buddhism is kind of a negative religion. It's depressing. You know, all I talk about is dukkha, pain. But really, Buddhism is about reality. All of us are going to die, and everyone we love is going to die. It's just the nature of the world. There's nothing that we can hold on to. It doesn't condemn us to being miserable. In fact, people who have really taken hold of practice can have a lot of joy. But it requires that we put our faith in what is truly reliable. And that means internalizing what is really a hard truth. It's not just us, everyone. How can we not have compassion for people who are angry, people who are hateful, people who are careless? People who are enslaved by their passions, by their addictions. What can we do that's more certain to help than to work on ourselves? Don't have to go anywhere. Don't have to be anybody else. Ajahn Chah says somewhere, it's not a game. Keep thinking it's a game. Have this. We have this moment. Birds calling outside the window. Stop now and recite the four vows.